This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 390 of Shutters Inc. This will be a short one. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me, freshly back from India, Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How are you?
And thanks for listening. See you next week. Yeah.
Awesome. How was the trip?
I haven't tripped over. What are you talking about?
Well, that's good, unlike your wife.
Oh, God. Yes, the India photo tour was so fantabulously good, we've already locked in dates for next year.
Nice. So, and what happened with the, I'm dying to know, with the on-again, off-again final thing that you were meant to be in a certain town for. Yep. Did it happen or not?
Of course not.
Right. Of course not.
It's India. So what has been advertised for 18 months is November 3rd, and photo tours and tourists and pilgrims have been coming from all around the world for that one particular date. All the high priests changed it to the next day, and who knows how many people got completely done over by. So it was to coincide with the full moon at a particular point rising. As we were taking off from Varanasi, the cruelty of all, we're taking off just at sunset, just as this enormous red moon was rising, which had been rising over the Ganges. You rotten.
That's harsh.
So to the point that the week before we left to go on the trip, my Varanasi contacted said, no, it's definitely back on the 3rd.
Right.
And then nothing. So having said that, there were some people celebrating on the 3rd, because I'm assuming they were kind of the same boat. Yeah, we were. They were there.
Yep.
So they. So there was some small stuff going on, but not as big as it would have been
the following day.
But overall, the trip was really good. The pushcar camel affair was really good. It was probably not as many camels as I was expecting, and I think that's probably which is it says bizarre.
Not much of a cheese shop, is it?
Of a cheese shop, there's not much cheese in it. It's over a 14-day period, so animals are coming and going over that time, so that's as they're being trained and sold off. But also, that world is diminishing.
Oh, okay.
The camel trade, I mean, I remember last year when we were down in the deserts, that our local guide, who's the prince of the area, was saying that there's only about two families down there now that still have nomadic camel tribes.
Right.
It used to be tens and 20s and 30s of families doing it.
Yeah,
because now with farming, they can't get through farms anymore. They can't get through land. They can't. It's hard to cross all the roads. So the world is changing. So their life is changing.
Yeah, right.
They're sort of going from camel tribes to following the crops and doing stuff like that. So So their world is changing. So if there's less of them down there, then there'd be less that would travel to the fair, of course. And there was still thousands and thousands of camels there. Don't get me wrong, but it was maybe not on quite the grand scale that I'd hoped it would be.
Yeah. Photographically, what was the most interesting point?
In the camel fair or across the whole trip?
Across the whole trip.
That's the problem with India. It's all good. There's a million great photo opportunities in India, and the hardest part is to isolate all that.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff going on all the time. And everywhere you look, there's a photo. Everywhere you drive, there's a photo. There's something happening every minute of every section of the day.
So
some highlights. So we visited a little visited mosque in Delhi, not the big mosque that everyone goes to, but this little small one.
Yep.
And whilst it didn't have an awful lot of people in there, it was such a novelty to have tourists coming. it was a really, really pleasant experience. And the main mosque in Delhi is a bit, the people who run it are a bit aggressive.
Right.
And it's all about money and charging people for cameras and making sure you don't have one camera more than you say you've got. And so the atmosphere is not as pleasant getting in. The people inside are lovely, but the people running it, not so much.
Yeah.
But this little one inside was fabulous all the time, which is really, really cool. So what else was a highlight? So the camel fair was definitely a highlight. I mean, there's some really cool stuff going on there. We had some pretty cool shoots. And once again, I guess the hardest part about the camel fair was trying to get a photograph without other photographers in it.
Right.
Because there's an awful lot of photographers go to this fair these days.
Yeah.
And this is the modern world again. Everyone sees this stuff on Instagram and Facebook, et cetera, or whatever. And they see these photos from these locations. They go, oh, I'd love to go there and shoot. So they do. Yeah, which is, of course, why we're there. So we can't complain because we're in the same boat.
Yes.
But it's getting very much the case that, you know, I think everywhere in the world now, the photographers travel so far to take photos and they want to emulate the stuff they've seen. So they go to the same places.
Yep.
So it's getting a little trickier there. But we had a fabulous time. We photographed some gypsy girls, some snake charmers.
Oh, wow.
Old camel guys and old camels. So, yeah, that was a pretty cool experience. And we're only there a day and a half, which I thought originally was too short. I thought, oh, gee, we should be there longer for this amazing place. But at the end of the day and a half of hot, dusty, camely kind of smelly work conditions. Nothing even had their fill.
Yep.
And we're happy to get going. So, yeah. And one of the other things with the fair, which kind of made it feel sparse at some points, is a lot of the traders don't want to pay to feed the camels when they're at the fair.
Oh.
So they take them out back out in the bush to feed them certain grass and bring them back in different parts of the day. So,
right.
So there's always camels coming and going kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that was really cool. The Varanasi is always a highlight.
Yep.
It's a fabulous place. To shoot. And there was a lot of people down bathing. So, you know, to take your boat and just sort of cruise along the river and watch this cultural event happen is always very cool.
Nice.
We went into an Indian gym called a Kushti gym,
right,
in Varanasi, and this is probably my favourite place to shoot.
Yeah, you know, right.
For the trip. So, well, because it's somewhere I haven't been before. Yeah, something I hadn't done before.
Sure.
So, there was really nice light. There was so they had these, you know, earthen floors and blue painted walls and all these kind of very different looking bits of gym equipment. So basically, like, you know, sticks with huge rocks on the end of them, and they had these strange things where they sort of flip it around over their shoulders. They had this pattern and skill that they do, and so that was really cool. I got a lovely sequence of shots from that.
Cool.
And basically, what they do is they train and they wrestle. So the Kushti wrestlers, if you're an actual Kushti wrestler, it's almost like a religion. So you have to sort of dedicate yourself to this lifestyle of being a Kushti wrestler. So you've got to be celibate, you've got to be a vegetarian, you've got to have all these other things that you can't drink, all this sort of stuff to be one of these wrestler guys.
So it's a little bit like the sumo stuff for the Japanese then?
Yeah, possibly, but skinnier.
Yeah.
But I guess there's some parallels to it. Yeah, and I've never been to one of these gyms before. So whilst there was no one there actually wrestling, whilst they were there, there were guys working out.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed photographing that. But this is always the dynamic of photographing with a group. I'm in this place. I'm going, oh my god, this is awesome. Shooting, half the group just sat down, didn't take photos.
What?
I know. So it's kind of hard to, but sometimes, oh, it just wasn't my thing, didn't interest me, you know, until, of course, I showed the photos.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't see the photograph.
Yep.
Sometimes you get to a place and, once again, there's lots of stuff going on. It's hard to find the small bits that are interesting.
Yeah.
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 So you've got to isolate this one guy working out or this one bit of equipment or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And so probably my favourite shots from the whole trip were from inside there. Yeah, at least five of the people sat and didn't take photos.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's as I said, when you're photographing with a group of people, it's not always easy, you know, to know, you know, what everyone's going to like.
Yeah, I have to admit, even from Europe, there were one or two places that we went to, and I can't think what they were right now, but I remember that there were a couple of places we went that I didn't shoot, and then later on I thought, oh, I really should have shot something there. Even though I didn't feel inspired at the time, I should have shot something just as a record.
But see, sometimes that's the time you should be shooting.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to shoot when everything's easy.
Yeah, true.
It's easy to shoot when there's good stuff everywhere to take photos of.
Yeah.
You know? And what happens then, that's when you tend to fall into the habit of just photographing the same way you always do.
Yeah.
But it's when nothing's inspiring and you can't see a photograph, if you can work your way to find a photograph or some photographs there, then you might find you're shooting outside of what you normally would shoot and opening up a whole new avenue of imagery or vision that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
That's the time you've got to push through the most. And it's hard to do, but that's the time you've got to push through and try, well, I've got to take a photo here. Imagine it's a job.
Yeah.
You know, you're being contracted to go to this place to take these photos.
Yeah.
It's not a bad way to think about it. You know, it's not force your brain to say, well, I've got to do it. You know? I'm not loving this, but I've got to find a way to take some photos.
Yeah.
See what you can pull out.
Yeah.
And you might still hate it, but at least
you gave it a shot.
Yeah, you pushed yourself a little bit and sort of seeing what you could find.
Yeah.
What else? Jodhpur is always a great place to shoot. So Jodhpur, the Blue City, we had a nice afternoon walking through there, and I got one of my favourite shots of the trip of these four ladies standing on the street corner with all the blue walls around,
yes.
And they're all really colourful.
Yes.
They look like a street gang.
Yeah, I saw you post that image.
That's what I put on Facebook. I said, yeah, you've got to be careful walking around Jodhpur. You come around the corner, you're faced with a gang of street toughs.
Yeah.
And there's these four ladies, and one's got black glasses on, which kind of helps the attitude.
Right.
it's kind of funny.
Excellent.
So Jodhpur was always a great place to walk around and shoot. I hurt my ankle there, though.
I
fell off part of the fort and landed badly on my foot, and for a while I thought I'd broken my foot.
Oh.
And over limping for the following sort of week or so, I think I've just done some ligament damage.
Yeah, right.
I said, and I said it to my wife, she said, oh, she's going to fall over and break her ankle in two spots to make herself worse than me.
Yeah.
So she went and did that. So for the last week whilst I was away, she's been trying to get around basically on one foot.
Yeah, right.
Incredibly inconsiderate, I must say. Yeah, adding that stress to me off the way.
Oh, so she went with you?
No, but she was home. Yeah,
right.
Kids.
Right.
Knowing that she's fallen over the bung ankle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, good on you, lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for nothing. Yeah, so that added to the stress of being. And it always is, whenever you're away, you always worry because you're kind of, yeah, you're off there having a good time, and your poor family are either missing you or they've got to do all the mundane stuff at home. And then when she gets injured, they have to rely on mother-in-laws and family friends to come and take the kids to school. You start feeling guilty.
Yeah.
Not much.
Yeah.
But a little bit. A little bit guilty. Another highlight, we did a little walk through a small village out near Varanasi, which I don't think they've ever seen a group of 12 photographers walking down their street before. That was really cool. Lots of variety there, and the interesting kids and interesting characters. I got probably one of my favourite shots of this old man with a push bike.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool. He kind of looks like he's dressed in a way that kind of looks like he's protecting the Holy Grail.
Right.
You know, he's got this. He's dressed in all white. He's got this cane, and he's got this red head. He's got a headdress on, but it's under a white scarf. So it looks like he's protecting. He should be standing there in an Indiana Jones movie or something.
Right.
Hell of a character. So I love that shot. So I'm still going. I've only gone through a small fraction of the images of what we shot.
Yep.
But the thing with India is there's a million photos, there's a million opportunities to take some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, right.
And that's probably why I noticed that, paying a little bit more attention. We had a few people there with less experience this trip than previous trips.
Right.
And you start to notice the challenges of this sort of stuff to people who aren't regular shooters.
Yeah.
Because at no place is there more a need to be able to operate fast.
Yeah.
And that fast is lens decisions first and foremost. If you've only got one camera, you're constantly struggling between which lens to use.
Yep.
So that's always a big bugbear, and to jump from one to the other. But then which mode to shoot in? There's not always a time for manual. There's aperture and shutter priority, and even program have their places.
Yeah.
And then with those modes, then you've got to be able to think about the foibles of the camera, the stuff that's going to, when it's going to step up the exposure, and try and preempt that before it happens.
Yep.
So it's quite a struggle for a lot of people. You miss an awful lot of shots because you're struggling jumping from for one. You've always got your hand in your bag changing lenses, or always got hand in the bag doing something, and it can be a little bit frustrating.
Yeah,
but it's part of the challenging learning to shoot, I guess.
Definitely.
All that. But that's probably an observation I noticed, and so straight away, everyone had one camera. Straight away, again, buy other cameras. camera. That's the big thing. I mean, having two cameras with two lenses on really frees up your ability to shoot. So my normal kit is my 15-30 on one camera and 70-200 on the other camera.
Yeah.
But for this trip, I spent a lot of time shooting with a lens I never ever shoot with, 24-70.
Right.
So I trying to force myself out of my comfort zone, my normal zone of shooting. But also, this new Tamron 24-70 just feels so damn nice. It's such a beautiful feeling that you want to use it.
Which of the other two lenses did that displace?
Well, the 15-30.
Right.
Instead of being really wide,
yep.
I was less wide.
Right.
So it hit a wall a few times where you'd want more space. And it really would have had a big advantage.
Yeah.
And there's no time to change because, once, as I've just been discussing, it happens so damn fast.
Yep.
So you kind of limit, sometimes you limit the shots you can take because of the gear you've got. But that was cool. That was a good experience itself, having that limitation.
Yeah.
So I don't complain, but I love the lens. And yes, it got some pretty cool shots out of it. And yeah, I learned how to see with it. I got some pretty cool shots that I wasn't, that probably, maybe I wouldn't have got otherwise, because the focal length wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah.
Maybe I got some shots that maybe I would have missed otherwise. I don't know. But
excellent.
All over a very good trip. It's we're just already putting into place dates for next year. So we're travelling from November 11 to 25. If anyone wants to come with us.
Right.
We're going to do the Pushkar Camel Fair again. We've already looked into the dates for the bloody festival we missed again, and we've got in for that.
So you need to make the tour so that festival is right in the middle of the tour, so they can't.
It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. But yeah, but we've given ourselves a release valve day just in case, you know.
Yeah, right.
We will be there, and this time we'll damn well shoot it.
Excellent.
That's going to be awesome. So book your leave, start saving. A small deposit will get you locked into it in 12 months to save. So
nice.
It's going to be a fabulous trip. So I heard you had some news whilst I was away.
Yeah, I got retrenched after 9 years in the job. So
it was 11.
No, nine years.
Yeah, got the arse.
Yep.
What did you do wrong?
Nothing. Nothing. Just the
nature
of the business had changed.
I've seen photos of you pestering all the guests that came to the studio. One of them complained. Someone's done a blind spine on you.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, bit of a shock.
It's the state of radio, is it?
Yeah. Anyway, onward and upward.
So what are you going to do?
I've got a few things out there in the marketplace at the moment, and I've got, you know, feelers out with everybody I know, and I, you know, after 30 years in the industry, I know a lot of people. I've got a couple of job applications in place, both of which I think I've got a pretty good chance at, and I'm doing a bit of freelance work in the meantime. I mean, not that I...
For the people who sacked you.
Yeah, well, yes, I am actually going back. Yeah, they called me back for 3 weeks, so starting next Tuesday.
At a much higher rate, obviously, because it's,
a marginally higher rate. So anyway.
You might be there for the next year.
Yeah.
Temporary stuff.
Yeah. I noticed one of my friends on Facebook said, "Oh, that's really good. If you do really well, it might turn into something permanent." It's like, yeah, nice.
That'd be funny. One of the guys in the tour with us also just got retrenched.
Right.
After he'd been there. I mean, he might have been one of their 11 or 12 years, something like that. But he made a fatal mistake. He was the head of their IT department.
Yeah.
He made a fatal mistake of employing a younger person for half his wage, who he taught 90% of his job to.
Yeah, right.
All of a sudden, he said, "I've got this kid who doesn't cost as much, who can do most of what this other guy does."
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah.
So be careful what you teach.
Yeah, exactly. Keep it all.
Yeah, teaching bad stuff.
Yeah.
Mentor badly.
Yeah. So anyway, I take the view that, you know, one door closes, another door opens, and that this was probably the universe telling me to get off my butt and go and find something else to give me a bit of a challenge. So,
not necessarily, because the world's a horrible place and you've just got luck with it.
It could just be that too. Who knows? Anyway.
Is that the slightly less positive way of
it? Yeah, that's right.
But look, you're young. Yeah, people say, oh, look, he's a young lad. He's got a long future ahead of him. So employing him, we've got 30 or 40 years of potential employment. Oh, not, that's not you at all, is it?
No.
So he's old. He's with it. He's probably dated in his viewpoints. He's not hip and young and up to speed with all the new stuff. So are you Twittering for jobs? Is that what the young people do? Or do they Snapchat for jobs these days?
No.
Do you do Snapchat interviews?
I don't do Snapchat.
The second news is, could be about the X.
Sorry?
You're not hip to all the young stuff. Like I am, obviously, those words. You know? If you're not Snapchatting in your job interview, yeah, and when you're doing it, you've got like the bunny ear Snapchat filter on.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to get you a job. Yeah, because Bruce is hip and young. Yeah, even if you're face-to-face with an interview, say, look, you just, because no one talks face-to-face, they'll just Snapchat each other in the desk. So you should download it. It might be open up a whole new world for you.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I wish you well. I hope all turns out.
Thank you, mate.
Turns out as best as possible.
So given that I've got all this time on my hands, I'm going to do a photo shoot with a male model on Friday.
Doing what? What's your inspiration?
I'm kind of open to ideas because I'm a little bit rusty. So I've said to him, just bring a few different sets of clothes and we're going to shoot at my place. And, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Is he like a muscle model or is he just an abnormal?
Not super muscly, but reasonably fit looking and younger. So,
Well, you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I did say to him, I said, look, I've got some weights here. We can move those down into the garage and we can do some, you know, weights type stuff if he wants to do that or if he just wants to do some...
Well, get a spray bottle and spray some water on him.
Yep. All that kind of stuff. Okay. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Do you have high-speed flash sync capabilities or...?
No, I don't.
So you could do some, like, powder stuff and things like that, you know, throw some cold powder on.
Yep.
Yeah, line your space with garbage bags and go nuts.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Could just be different.
Yeah. Anyway, we can...
Do you have constant lights?
No, I don't have those either.
So you got studio flash or flash?
I've got both. I've got speed lights and I've got studio heads.
Oh, well, we look forward to seeing what you come up with.
Yeah. Yeah, so do I.
How are you going to inspire yourself lighting-wise? Are you going to watch some videos? What are you going to do to get your mojo going?
That's a good question. I was just going to wing it, but maybe I should watch some videos.
I suggest you go with some form of at least two or three shots planned.
Right. Yep.
So just two or three shots that gives you a starting point for stuff.
Yeah. I have been kicking around in my head your comments from the shoot I did with Tammy a couple of months ago where you said, you know, come up with one idea and work that shot until you've absolutely got it. So I'm certainly had that kicking around in my head over the last few days. So,
but what's important is not to go in there completely blank, because completely blank sometimes puts more pressure on you. So what happens then is you try to rush the images.
Right.
Because you haven't really got a firm idea. So you start to go, and the more you rush, the less it works, the more stress you put on yourself, the harder it gets to shoot. It just all snowballs kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So what I would do is I would go online, look for some inspirational photographs, and I'd be Googling stuff like male model behind the scenes.
Right.
And to try and get a couple of shots, I like the look of that. Oh, where are the lights? And if it's behind the scenes, you should be getting some ideas of where the lighting is and what kind of lighting mixes. And so, maybe I'll start with something like that.
Yep.
And it gives you a starting point image. And once you've got that, then you can tweak that to more your style. But at least you've got a lighting setup look that's not too flat. And as I said, you have a tendency to overlight your shots.
Yep.
So they're a bit flat. So you might look at it and go, oh, I've had that sculpted a bit more. Oh, look where the light is. It's a bit more angular than I probably would normally have done and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or start where you normally would have your light, right? Then move it a foot further around away from you, then another foot further away. Yeah, do a sequence of moving the light further and further and arc around your subject.
Yep.
And look how the mood changes.
Yep.
And that way you're changing the look. It's changing the feel, and you might open up some opportunities that you hadn't seen. And you go, oh, I'm loving that. And that gives you the inspiration. That everything starts to snowball in a positive way that way, rather than snowball stress.
Yep.
So whatever you set up first, make sure you move the light. Even if you're loving it, move the lights, because it could be better. It could be worse.
Yep.
But, you might find what you're loving afterwards, because it looks okay. Afterwards, you go, it's not quite as nice as I thought it was.
Right.
But if you'd moved it a foot, you might have been right on the cusp of something really, really good.
Yep.
And moving that foot actually makes it that good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so
okay.
Try. And that goes for height as well. So try a little bit higher, try the light a little bit lower.
Okay.
Yeah, then Yeah, so try and work some of those arcs with your lights, and I think you'll find you'll hit some sweet spots that look really good. Another really cool thing to do. So your studio lights, they have modelling lamps on them.
They do.
Okay, so you set up where you think looks good, but then get your subject to walk into the light. Okay, so they sort of step a bit further back so the light's not touching them, and then walk all the way through that light until they're coming out this side towards you. Okay,
right.
And you're watching how the modeling lamps, how it's lighting their body, you might find the position you've got them standing, they were better 6 inches further back or 6 inches further forward. It really changes the mood.
Right.
So what you'll find is the shot will go from really soft to really dramatic as they move through.
Okay.
And you'll find the zone there maybe that really suits this particular subject.
Okay.
It gives it gorgeous. So I do it every studio workshop I do this walkthrough. I put basically two strip box lights on left and right and get the models to walk through it slowly.
Right.
And people then see how light's spilling this direction, are very flat, more dramatic, really bold, you know, over the top. Oh, it's not lighting the door anymore, kind of stuff.
The only downside is I don't have any light modifiers for my studio heads other than a single 22-inch beauty dish. That's the only modifier I've got for my studio heads.
So how many heads do you have?
Two.
Okay. Don't even have an umbrella?
I'm not sure if I've got one that I can attach to the studio heads.
So most studio heads have their own built-in hole to put an umbrella in.
Okay. Well, I do have some umbrellas, so maybe I can set those up with the studio heads.
Yeah, so I'll just do two umbrellas. Forget the beauty dish.
Yep.
To start with, just two umbrellas. Yep. Bang, bang. Even if it's just translucent white ones, just bang, bang, and then work it from there.
Yep. Okay.
And but yeah, umbrellas, you know, it's going to be beautiful light,
yeah,
but it's really easy to work with,
yeah,
and yeah, you'll be able to do some cool stuff.
Cool.
Oh, good on you, mate. It's good to get out there and do something, eh?
Yeah, I just feel like I need to, you know, get back into it and, yeah.
Need something for you.
Yeah. Oh. All right, I got a couple of things from listeners that I thought I'd just quickly address. One was from Steve Fells, who recently discovered the podcast, and he asked about something else, which we'll cover at a later date. But he also said, on the particular episode he was listening to, around the 32-minute mark, you made the comment, an ND filter is your best friend when using flash outdoors, allowing you to open up your aperture and lower your flash power. The ND would also apply to the light from the flash, meaning it would have no effect. As I said, maybe I'm wrong, but I'd like to hear your view. And I think what I was referring to at the time was the fact that if you're shooting outdoors in sunlight, then quite often you won't be able to get under the sync speed of the camera in order to use flash, and that by employing an ND filter, you'll be able to get a slower shutter speed so that you can use fill flash in an outdoor environment. I think that's what that was in reference to.
Yeah.
And the other one was from Rob Coates, who said, "G'day geeks, this week I stumbled upon this Kickstarter site for a project called Arsenal."
He's talking to you when he says that, though, isn't he? The geeks bit.
Yeah, yeah, presumably, yes. It's a small gizmo that attaches to your DSLR's hot shoe and plugs into the accessory port. It considers 18 different environmental factors and handles all the creative decisions for any given photo situation, depth of field, aperture, etc. All you have to do is stand within 100 feet of the camera with your smartphone and tell Arsenal to take the photo. Sounds like a great idea to me, and I have no doubt that when I get one, my photos will be on the cover of National Geographic Lickety Split. Or maybe I'll wait for the Mark II version. Hopefully that will be a completely autonomous model that'll allow me to have a nice lie-in while my camera's out getting those fabulous sunrise shots that I'd otherwise have to get up at Sparrow Fart to capture."
All you need to do is to build that into a drone.
That's right.
So you can fly out to do the photos for you.
That's it.
It's a crazy world of stuff. Yeah, so speaking of exactly the opposite to that, I noticed that on Kickstarter there is the first 35mm SLR, new SLR system being designed in 25 years coming up as a Kickstarter project.
Right.
So someone's actually bringing out, it's called Reflex, they're bringing out their own modular Reflex 35mm camera system.
Right. And what's different about it?
Well, it's going to be new to buy, so therefore you're not buying an old, fallen down piece of junk that who knows what's on it, which is Yeah, for starters. But it's got a modular back for the film, for starters. So basically you can change films out halfway through just by changing the module.
Right.
Because you might have a module with black and white in, you might have a module with colour in, or slide, or whatever it may be, and you can swap them out, which is pretty good. So you're not kind of stuck with just that. And it has a modular lens mount system. Now, I haven't actually looked closely at that. What would make sense to me is if they could have a modular mount, which could be like an old Canon EOS mount, it could be a Nikon mount, it could be a Pentax screw mount, that would be kind of cool. Because then you could put all your old lenses onto it.
Yep.
Let's have a little gander what it says. So it's got a built-in flash, a bit like a compact camera.
Right.
Rather than on the hot shield top, on the side there, spot metering. So the lens module, interchangeable lens mount. So it's interchangeable daylight film back, flash and LED. Oh, it will be able to link to your phone if they get to a certain point. It'll have an app. So it'll log all your film settings, all the settings for each shot.
Oh, nice.
So you'll be able to keep that, which is kind of clever.
Yeah. Because that's the one thing you lack in the digital age is that anything you shot on film, you've got no record of what the aperture was, what the focal length was, whether the flash fired or not.
Writing it all down. Yeah, here we go. So the lens mount has different plates. One plate's the old M42 screw mount, Nikon F, Canon FD, Olympus OM, or Pentax PK mounts.
Right.
So if you've got a bunch of old Olympus lenses or whatever laying around, you could buy this camera with the Olympus lens mount and you put your Olympus lenses straight onto it.
Sweet.
Which is rather clever, isn't it? Hey,
yeah.
Here's the problem, though. Resolution 0 megapixels.
Yeah, love it.
But yeah, rechargeable lithium batteries. This is Bluetooth. So it's kind of this melding mix of old and new. That's already over 50% backed already.
Right.
To think, so what's it going to cost? The cheapest one you can get looks to be about £350, so about $600. So it's not cheap,
right?
Not a cheap thing, but it's well backed already, which is good. I'll send a little link through for you so you can have a look at it.
Cool.
But once again, you got this diametrically opposed thing for your camera that does everything: ISO, aperture, everything. And then this other thing, it's all full manual, exact back in the film. You know, completely opposite mentality about how to shoot.
Yeah,
it's a funny world. Have we ever lived in a more exciting time for photography?
I don't think so.
My little Yashica has been updated a few times since they've upgraded the lens, they've upgraded the sensor size, they've all sorts of stuff. So it's going to be quite a sweet little camera when it finally comes out next year.
Nice. Now, while you were away, I think this happened after you left, it was announced that Google had sold Nik software to DxO. And so we had a bit of a chat about that a couple of weeks ago on the episode that David Marland and I did. And we were talking about whether or not, you know, DxO would charge for the product. And I suggested that it made sense that they would eventually, because if they're going to put R&D into it, they're going to want a return on that investment. At the moment, they're not. They're still giving it away. And David did send me an email to say, "Hi, Bruce, looking at the DxO page, they're already offering an upgraded version of DxO, DxO Photo Lab, which incorporates the U-Point technology from Nik, making it very easy to do localized adjustments. That's the Nik feature where you click on a point in the photo, get a radius area and a series of sliders within that area. They're not mucking around. Regards, David." So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what DxO does with it.
Well, they're going to release a whole new program in 2018.
Yep.
And that's when they'll charge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So whatever they're doing, it's going to be this brand new lickety-split bloody program.
Yep.
And it's going to be, pay to play. There's no logic otherwise in having it. But hopefully they'll do some really cool stuff with it. They'll enhance what was already a great set of programs and make them even more better.
Exactly.
Which would be good.
Awesome.
Ah.
All right, mate. Well, good to have you back.
Is that all we got? It's good to be back, almost.
Over the jet lag?
I was supposed to be away the next 2 days because my wife bunged her ankle. I'm going to have to shift all that around. I'm away for Tasmania for the next week as well for a Cradle Mountain weekend.
Right.
This Sunday, it's too late, obviously, with the podcast, but I'm doing a People with Cameras event in Melbourne for Fuji.
Yep.
Yeah, so you come home, you're flat out, and you got a poor wife who can't move. And
yep. Well, you should jump on the Shutters Inc. podcast page on Facebook and post about that on there as well as on your CPW page.
Yes, good point. Yes, yes. So, the people, because the 8 people who look at that page.
That's right.
You might be able to pull now 10% of them.
Yeah, that's right.
0.8 of one person.
That's it.
Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Thanks, mate. It's good to be back. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, mate. Gotcha.
Look after yourself, mate.
Will do.
Bye.
All right. So let's wrap it up with a book review from David Marland. What do you got for us, David?
Thanks, Bruce. Is seeing creatively a talent that some people naturally have, or can it be learned? Or is it a bit of both? I'll put my cards on the table at the outset. I actually think it is a bit of both because I think I'm improving slowly in my compositions over time. But I know there are people who've got a lot more talent than me, who see further into a subject and have a better instinctive understanding of that relationship between what the human eye sees and what the camera sees. Or they've simply got a better sense of colour and tone and composition. Learning to See Creatively by Brian Peterson begins with a simple question. All of us who are blessed with light can see, but why is it that someone right next to us can see something of interest, yet we somehow miss it? And he replies to his own question. Not being able to see is probably the greatest hurdle every photographer has to overcome, but it's a skill you can hone with work and dedication. And those last couple of words are really important. This book is just over 140 pages of simple text and excellent photography and provides an easy to understand approach to this issue. It makes you think about what you look at and encourages you to learn to see. The book's broken into sections looking at the elements of design such as line, shape, form, texture. Then it looks at composition, light and colour. Now I found myself more than once going, ah, so that's why. Or, ah, so that's the difference between this concept and that concept. Another thing I liked about this book is it doesn't drone on about gear that you should have to take photographs. Yes, if you buy the book, you'll see every photo has got detailed metadata about the camera, lens, and all the settings. But these are really a courtesy in the context of this book. There is a section near the front on different types of lenses, but it talks about those lenses' capabilities in terms of what they see, not what they are. And what is shown is a couple of the same scenes photographed with different lenses, showing how, depending on the lens you have at the time, you can photograph creatively. Now, these pictures are not the traditional same composition with different levels of zoom to show you how you can see a distant building. It's actually recomposing the picture as well. And that's what makes you think. I like this book, and I'm going to continue to dip into it for some thought and inspiration. Learning to See Creatively, third edition, is by Brian Peterson, and it's published by Amphoto Books. It's a large format softback, and it's on Booko for between $25 and $52. But be a little bit wary when you look it up. Brian is spelt B-R-Y-A-N, and he is sometimes referred to as Brian F. Peterson. Brian is also the author of that classic book, Understanding Exposure. And there are other books with very similar titles, so hunt carefully. Cheers.
Excellent. Thank you, David. Either your cat is in the background or you've got your Christmas bells around your neck. Nice work, mate. All right. As mentioned, Glyn is away next week, so I will work out what we're going to do next week. But until I speak with you next, take care.
shutterzinkpodcast.com.
Another audio2.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzinkpodcast.com.